Something about the floors.
Yeah, you gotta get it off the floor.
Yeah. Okay. Well, would you mind introducing yourself and what you do at the university? Maybe we can go into your work a little bit later, but...
Yeah. My name is Matthew Shelton. I teach drawing at the university. I'm an adjunct professor of drawing here at UVA, and I also teach at VCU and in Art Foundation there, and I am ostensibly an artist. I have an MFA in painting and printmaking from VCU, and I make artworks that make sometimes oblique and sometimes overt references to the past and to my subject position as an inheritor of white masculinity.
Can you talk a little bit about projects that you have going on right now?
Right now, I have some things going on. Right now, I'm doing a writing, semi-formal writing program in Richmond called Richmond Critical Writers. And there's about a handful of us. Lauren Ross, who was the inaugural curator for the ICA, the new ICA that's coming there, started it up. So I've been writing a fair amount for that. And what I'm working on right now is a piece about monuments. And in addition to that, I've been trying to draw every day. It's kind of like Inktober, but it's more like draw annual. But it's hard. Because I'm developing a course called Drawing as Contemplative Practice. So I'm trying to practice what I contemplate. Because it's not preachy, it's not religious. It's just mindfulness without those Buddhists telling you what to do all the time. nobody can stand them. I've been doing a combination of mostly blind contour, but some other drawing methods. I try to draw for 15 minutes a day, preferably in the morning, preferably undivided attention. And it helps with creativity, anxiety, noticing things.
Yeah. Well, and can we go back maybe to what you said you're writing about statues? Or you
monuments, also, Yeah. I'm writing about monuments because we get these prompts for the writing program that we have to respond to, and then we have mentors that come. We meet up like once every 3 weeks. Yeah, mentors that come and that give us the prompts to begin with, and then they come and go over our writing together and kind of guide us in discussion for a day. So I have to do a lot of editing on mine, but what I have been writing about is this this one monument that just got removed in New Orleans. I used to live in New Orleans from 2006 to 2010. I lived there, and my wife's family is from there. When I first moved there, I worked at a bookstore in the French Quarter called Crescent City Books, and it's still there. It's not in the quarter anymore, but a wonderful antiquarian bookstore. And sometimes I would take my lunch break and I would walk around the quarter, and I went to, I found, I didn't find, I learned about this monument that was at the base of Canal Street, so really close to the Mississippi River, basically in the French Quarter. There's a monument to an event that happened in 1877 that heralded the end of Reconstruction in New Orleans. So there was a integrated government in the city after the Civil War until 1877 or so, and then at that point it was violently overthrown by former Confederates and sympathizers, cross-class people unified by white supremacy, basically, overthrew the government that was in place violently. And then they put up a monument, an obelisk, like kind of looks like the Washington Monument, but more, even more sword-like somehow. And they put it at the base of Canal Street, which is kind of like the, not the political center, but the social and cultural and economic center of the city. And it said, it was the plaque initially engraving said something about reinstating, getting rid of the usurpers and reinstating white supremacy in the South. So it was originally there, and then it got moved like a block and a half away, so it was put more out of sight. And then in the early 90s, I think is when it was revised, they put a new piece of text over it that honored, quote, all those who died on that day. So still whitewashing, but ostensibly more superficially neutral than just saying we're for white supremacy. But it stood for a really long time. And in the meantime, this stuff just kind of grew up around it. There's like a power substation that's right there. So it's like right, like the sign of white power is actually kind of like, coincidentally, is right next to a literal electrical power station. So there's like all these transformers there and stuff. And then it's also, but it's also behind a parking deck for a mall of luxury stores. And it's also kind of off to the side and in front of the aquarium. So it's kind of in between all these things. I was really interested in how this monument to white supremacy, this overt monument to white supremacy and violence in support of white supremacy was still standing, but was kind of stuck in this one little, it was like tucked away in a cranny in the city, and all this other stuff had grown up around it. And I really liked thinking about that as a metaphor for the way that race works for, especially for white people in the South and in the U.S., because it's like something that most people have the privilege not to talk about and not to have to think about their own relationship to. And so, but it shapes their world nonetheless. So it's this weird phallus stone in the middle of nowhere, but in the absolute heart of the city. So,
yeah. Well, that's interesting. So I know we touched a little bit about this just in the past, but as an artist and very woke person.
No. Don't say that. No. Okay. But well, go ahead.
I was just going to wonder, like, what you or how you think art plays in, or how it should play into politics, or at least for you, or how, or maybe in the larger world right now.
It's a great question. It's pretty much a question that a lot of artists are all perennially consumed with. There's a new podcast that just started. It's hosted by William Palhaida, who's an artist who makes artworks about art and the art world and the politics of the art world, and Patty Johnson, who's the editor of a website called Art F City. And the podcast is on iTunes. You can get it, or Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, as they like to say. It's called Explain Me. And I would really recommend it for anybody who's interested in this question, because they talk about, the metaphor I like to use is how the sausage gets made. So what goes into producing artworks, selling them, distributing them, and how things like economic inequality play a huge role in that. Exploitation of labor, how these are personal issues for artists, not just subjects for artwork, but personal issues for artists. And I just think that, you know, there was a great artist named Paul Tech who developed this set of questions for a class he taught called 4D Design in the late 70s and early 80s, and they're called Teaching Notes, and they're kind of legendary within art education circles, because it's just a series of questions and prompts for his students to respond to, and they ask things like, what religion are you? Do you consider yourself rich? And then they also have prompts like, redesign the rainbow, or redesign human genitalia to be more equitable, etc. Like, from like the practical to the aspirational to the totally impossible and imaginative. And so what he was asking his students to do is to think about how their work is in discourse with things that we have been told don't usually have to do with art, right? Like that we think of art as being eternal. Ars longa vita brevis, is that the thing? But it also is made of the here and now. It's made, and it's not made outside of that. Like, art has to have a form. That's one thing that one of my artist heroes, Paul Chan, says. It has to have a form. Even a piece about emptiness has to have a space to happen in, right? So when you're making stuff, it's good to be thinking about, where do your materials come from? Why did you choose those materials? What led you to think that subject matter or material was useful for art? And what might or might not be visible or represented as material or subject matter in art history. Another thing that Paul Chan says that I think really sums this up, and like why one might look to what we traditionally call, and for lack of a better term, call politics. I don't know if you guys could hear the air quotes on that. I'm going to paraphrase, but it's something. It's from his artist statement for an outdoor public production of Waiting for Godot that he and Creative Time and the Classical Theater of Harlem did in New Orleans in 2007. In his artist statement, he says, it's often said that everything that can be done, has been done in art, air ellipses, dot, dot, dot. But that leaves, but that doesn't consider everything that ought to be undone. So I just butchered that. But basically to think about the vast undiscovered country of what ought to be undone. And that if you think about, I mean, we're in dialogue right now as a country, I mean, in a very overt way, I think, with, like, we just celebrated Columbus/Indigenous Peoples Day yesterday on Monday. And that's just one place where I think there is an emergent national discourse. And again, when we say that, a mainstream discourse, that mostly means that middle-class people, white people, are having to talk about it for the first time. And that means that it's being taught in elementary schools, right? That they're the ones having the conversation. That's like the measure of mainstreamness, right? Discourse about what has been done and what ought to be undone, right? But we're very reluctant to have a conversation about that, because if you start talking about what ought to be undone, then you start having a conversation about responsibility. And you know, James Baldwin says in The Fire Next Time, and in a lot of essays, nonfiction that he wrote, every people throughout history has done terrible things to other people. That's not the crime. The crime is the lie about it, is the claim to innocence. It's the innocence, the claim to innocence, that is the crime, is to act like you didn't do anything, or act like you don't benefit from something that you do benefit from. So, you know, whether you're talking about why highlighting the contributions of Native peoples or also developing an understanding of what contributed to their eradication in the Americas, or whether you're talking about Confederate monuments in Charlottesville and beyond, there's the original thing that happened, and then there's the lying about the thing that happened. And we have to deal with the lying about the thing that happened first, or in addition to, you know. And for me, engaging other people with the lying about the thing that happened is something that you can do with art. And sometimes it's a lie that you know you're making, and it's self-delusional. Sometimes it's a lie that you didn't know it was a lie. And I think that's the way a lot of children start out. It's like eating hamburgers. You're like, whoa, those are cows? Dang. You know? And that's a trite kind of metaphor, but there's a point at which we take responsibility for the way in which we benefit. One benefits from something like slavery, whether it's like inherited wealth or even just like the intellectual privilege that's just like bubbling around a place like this. There's a time at which you can't just say, I didn't know any better, right? And you're accountable for like your relationship to that. Yeah, so that's why I don't know about all other artists, you know, just for myself, it just became a way of when you start getting involved in political discourse in a way that actually where there's something significant at stake for yourself, like where you feel like you might actually change as a person on some level, then that just kind of like shaking up the snow globe or the soda bottle or whatever. It's like there's a lot of stuff that gets generated by that and affected by that. And I don't think it's always appropriate to just like, especially if you're like a cis white dude, to be in a activist meeting and like talk about your feelings, you know, about something that you're, you know, whether it's, but I do think that art can be a place for that. But even like a lot of people dispute that. And that's something that's a challenge that I've had to respond to. It's just not just navel gazing and not just receiving further profit or benefits from my privilege at the expense of other people's suffering.
And maybe I'm not sure if this is moving away from that topic or if it's tied, but at the end of the day, what keeps you making art? That's kind of a hard question, but maybe.
No, it's not.
No?
I think, you know, in the past we talked about like one of the things that, I don't know about keeps me, but sends me to make art is that it's a spiritual practice. It's a spiritual endeavor for me. And it's a way of sorting through you know, contradictions and antagonisms, and it's also a way of chasing wonder, you know, there's a feeling of that electricity of like of recognition when you're making something and you're in the zone, something that some kind of material combination or image that you're working on emerges that you somehow recognize but is also unexpected. You know, I've described it in the past as like a baby being born. Like if you before I became a parent, I thought it would be like this, and I don't know, I haven't really updated it since then, but when art is successful, it's like a baby being born in the sense that like you can, it makes sense in its resemblance, but you couldn't have anticipated it, you know? Like when I look at my daughter now, it's like, yeah, I see myself and I see my wife, I see her mother, and I see other people, and I also see a new person, you know, that I couldn't have predicted, you know? And there's something about that. There's something about that, and there's also this other thing about just kind of like where you're thinking about the stuff that you're allowing your hands to think through some of the problems that really bug you, you know? Like for me, there's like I think, again, air quotes, political content is just a way of thinking about the ways in which the intractable situations in the world that you feel totally powerless over, you know, that you wish weren't that way, you know?
That's great. Thank you so much for talking with us today. That's about all the time we got, so that sounds great.